European economic growth rebounds, but there's always a but. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. France, Germany, and Italy, three of Europe's biggest economies, saw a sharp bounce back from the coronavirus crisis between July and September. The three nations saw growth between 8 and 18% during the third quarter, but with a second wave taking hold in Europe and some nations already announcing second national lockdowns, the end of the year isn't looking as bright, as Simon French from Panmure Gordon explains.
Actually, there's a lot of symmetry between France, Germany, and Italy. Their economies are all between about 4 and 5% down from where they were this time 12 months ago. So there's still a big gap despite what has been an impressive third quarter rebound.
And now we're seeing fresh lockdown restrictions across the continent. How much pain is on the way for the fourth quarter because of all this?
So we expect growth in the Eurozone to pull back as a result of the restrictions announced over the last few days. The economic momentum that was impressive in Q3 is likely to stall. The challenge, of course, for policymakers is to keep the exceptional support through monetary policy and fiscal policy, keep that coming for businesses and households that are quite fatigued with a second set of restrictions.
Will it be cushioned in a sense? Because we've all been here before. Restaurants can continue operating their takeout operations. People have gotten used to ordering food boxes online and things like that. Will that keep consumer spending at least up through the second lockdown phase?
That's a really important point, that businesses and households have changed their behavior out of necessity. And actually, going forward, there are more distribution channels for businesses. They've invested time and effort to work. Consumers are more familiar with going to work in different fashions. So you're right, the adjustment cost should be lower. The challenge, however, is for company balance sheets, which have taken a lot of debt to see them through the summer. They are going to be less able to deal with sustained economic disruption.
Simon French at Panmure Gordon, thanks so much.
Thank you.
France's month-long national lockdown goes into effect today, but before the clock struck midnight, traffic around Paris hit record levels as Parisians left the city to spend lockdown in the countryside. As COVID-19 infection rates continue to rise on this side of the Atlantic, European leaders have vowed to improve coordination of quarantine and rapid testing technology across the region, and the president of the European Commission said work needs to start now to prepare infrastructure for a mass vaccination program across Europe. That's a topic we've covered in depth here on Marketplace Morning Report. For all of our coverage about the challenges in distributing a COVID-19 vaccine to the world, head to our website and click on the Fast Track tab. Checking the numbers now, European stocks are little changed this morning, though this week's volatility has seen benchmarks across the region shed between 5 and 8% over the last 5 days. U.S. stock futures are pointing to a solidly lower start on Wall Street. Shares of Air France KLM fell as much as 4% today after it warned new travel restrictions will bring further pain to the business and wider airline industry. A pantry staple, basmati rice, is the source of new tensions between India and Pakistan. The government in Islamabad says it vehemently opposes an application by Delhi for the long-grain aromatic staple to get special recognition by the European Union. It's called sole geographical indication, or GI status, as the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar in Mumbai explains.
Pakistan believes that the GI status for basmati rice, which is basically used to mark a product as being from a specific region, would affect its own exporters at a time when Pakistani rice exports to the EU have doubled in the past 3 years. Now, the status seems to have quite an impact. The price of Darjeeling tea shot up after 2011 when the state of West Bengal was given the exclusive rights to carry the name on packets of its leaves. So it's not surprising at all that Pakistan is worried. For now, a spokesperson of the European Commission has been quoted as saying that the application from the Indian side has been published, but stakeholders can lodge an opposition to it for a 3-month period, and that's what Pakistan seems to be doing.
Nikhil Anamdar reporting there. Well, Election Day in the U.S. is just 4 days away, and as Americans head to the polls, people in other parts of the world are placing bets on who they think is likely to win the White House. While election betting is illegal in the U.S., it's not here in the U.K. So to find out how bookmakers are viewing this election, we called Joe Lee, head of political betting at Paddy Power.
it's safe to say that there's only one candidate that people are interested in, and that's Donald Trump. So approximately 8 out of every 10 bets we've taken in the last 2 months have been on Donald Trump. 4 years ago, Donald Trump obviously knocked over Hillary Clinton in the US election, and people are remembering that. They're remembering the payouts that they had, and they're happy to go again.
So how accurate of an indicator is betting if we compare it to the outcomes of other elections here in the UK, for example? Is it more reliable than polling is?
In 2016, you had Donald Trump in the US election, you had Brexit, and then you had the turn up for Theresa May in the UK general election that she called. And essentially, they were three high profile scenarios that kind of all went against the polls. If you looked at the 650 constituencies in the UK general election and polled those, in all likelihood, about 90% plus of those would be polled correctly. We just got outliers, but very high profile outliers that kind of shaped people's opinion of the difficulty with polls.
And it's not just who's going to win the White House this year. What are some of the most popular bets that people have been placing so far?
A lot of interest in the various states. So Florida currently now has swung back in favor of Donald Trump. And I think there's some indications coming out of Florida that given the pandemic, a lot of people have shifted towards the postal absentee ballot route, and the numbers coming out of Florida are indicating that the Democrats aren't quite as far ahead of the Republicans. And obviously the Republicans are going to, I'd suggest, win on the day in-person voting quite significantly.
Really interesting stuff. Joe Lee from Paddy Power, thanks so much for your time.
That's perfect.
Well, if you want more on the business of voting, head to marketplace.org for all our coverage on election infrastructure in 2020. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.